Of the Hornets, don't.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the same place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
None of them can ever play against. It makes us ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, powered by Bama Hammer. Tom, was that a regression to the mean, or was the tide looking ahead to next week?
You know, I don't think the tide was looking ahead. I just think the tide is still, they really still haven't found the identity, which, as we know, is run the ball and set up the play action. And I had been screaming for that play action play to Calvin Ridley for about 15 minutes before it got called. And as Todd Blackledge said, I think that was what finally ignited the offense.
Yeah, there's no question, right? That definitely ignited the offense. You know, Coach has talked about, you know, the especially starting off, the large number of passing plays was really a function of, you know, we were calling plays that had a run pass option based on what the defense, how they line up. And so, you know, they line up in a certain way. We know it's Arkansas. They're going to play a smash mouth type of ball game. They're going to try to win the trenches. And so it, you know, in doing so, that opened up some passing lanes early. And then we came back and did kind of set up the run. And you got to love the play action when it works to perfection like that. 81 yards down the field, right?
Yes, man, and I was sitting there calling for it. I felt like it was a good time to call it way earlier than it got called. And you know, I want to spend a few minutes talking about the sequence of plays, you know, early in this game. Sure. It's great that we won the game, but you know, Coach Saban talks about putting your foot on their throat. We really didn't put the foot on their throat early. Like we should have. This should have never been a game going into the third quarter like it was. Right. I mean, you know, you can give me your thoughts here real quick, but this should not have been a game where you were losing to Arkansas 7-3 going into halftime. And I think that's more about what our show needs to be about, because I think that, you know, either Lane Kiffin wasn't calling the right plays, either Saban was overruling Kiffin. We'll never know. It didn't look like Jake was audibling very much. You know, if you were to point a finger, right? If you had a chance to think behind the scenes, why do you think some of the plays were called, you know, in the red zone early like was called?
Well, you know, I'm going to take a very different stance. I mean, I can tell you're kind of coming in wanting to kind of be critical of the offensive performance. And, man, I am completely the other side of the coin on this. I think the offense played, I think the offense played very well. And this game really reminded me of the 2011 game against LSU in Tuscaloosa, where we just had a couple of misfires. And, of course, missing field goals is never going to help you. But, you know, we went back and we watched that game. All of the miscue. I mean, we were driving the ball between the 20s against LSU, and it was just a couple of subtle miscues that prevented that game from being a blowout. And, of course, we rematched them later in the year for the championship, and we complete some of those drives, and we score those points where we didn't before. And this game against Arkansas, and I'm not saying that Arkansas is LSU. I mean, we lost that game to LSU 9-6, and we've won this game 27-14. So, you know, there's your context. But my point is, it felt just like that game where we're moving the ball. Everything is comfortable from an offensive standpoint. We're just miscuing a little bit. And if we clean up some of those miscues, I mean, you know, we had 80 plays, 34 minutes time of possessions, 20 first downs, almost 400 yards of offense. It's a little tinkering. It's a little tune-up. And this game could have been 28-0 at half. It easily could have been 28-0. It easily could have been 14 or 17 at half. And I thought we had some poor clock management going into half, and we missed a couple of field goals, and then we had to settle for a field goal. Well, that could have been four touchdowns. And if you split the difference and you know, give me two touchdowns, then, you know, 14 you know, 14-7 or 14-0 maybe nothing is going to look a lot better than, you know, 7-3. And I just think it was a little bit of tweaks is what the offense needed. And so I don't know, you're going to come at this maybe a little differently, but that's sort of the line in the sand I'm drawing.
All right. Well, I guess I want to speak to we were dominating the opponent and they were on their heels early. And so I guess I really want to touch on probably for the most part, starting with the second drive for us in the game. You know, we sit there and finish the first quarter and we've had the ball for 11 minutes.
Yep. Yep.
And they've had the ball for 3 minutes and change. And so I guess on that particular drive, we start the drive. Derrick Henry rushes 5 yards. Derrick Henry, the other end, right end, 8 yards. You know, here's another play, 5 yards, Henry, 5 yards. Then Kenyon Drake, let's give you 2 for 6 yards. So now we're sitting here, first and 10 at the Arkansas 27, and we have had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 plays out of 7 where we've gained at least 5 yards running the ball. And we decide to get cute at the 21 on 2nd and 4, and we decide to pass it to Calvin Ridley for 2 yards for a poorly thrown pass. And then on 3rd and 2, okay, Jake Coker ends up running the ball, scrambling, but we drop back to pass again. He fortunately gets a first down. And then we have 1st and 10 at the 13. So we've pretty much dominated them down the field, and we've started at our 32-yard line. And so now we have 1st and 10 at the 13 of Arkansas, and we do 3 pass plays. So I guess that's what I want to start with is six out of 7 plays, we've run the ball down their throat, left end, right tackle, left tackle, up the middle, everywhere. And we decide to get cute. And so on 2nd and 5 at the 8-yard line, we decide to do a play action pass and throw it to Calvin Ridley in the end zone. Well, David, if you go back and watch the tape, he's set up in the pistol. He play action to Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry could have walked in the end zone for a touchdown. Why? Because we had dominated them right down their throats running the ball for, you know, 70 yards. So then on 3rd and 5, what do? At the 8, we decide to pass again, and he throws into double coverage to O.J. Howard. So my point is, if you're Alabama football and you're all about the run, and you've dominated a team and you've got them 2nd and 5 at the 8, you can get a 1st and goal at the 3. It should have been, we're going to run the ball 3 times on 2nd, 3rd, and 4th down if we have to, and we got 3 plays to get 5 yards. And I'm sorry, I want to know who called 2 pass plays on 2nd and 5 at the 8. Because had you just sat there and called 3 run plays up the middle, you would have set the tone. You would have been up 10-0, and you would have had this team on their heels.
Well, I think, you know, Coach answered that question in his presser today, and he talked about, you know, those are plays, those are run pass options. And so, you know, the quarterback at the line of scrimmage, based on how the defense is lined up, is not an audible change play necessarily. It's you're going to the line with 2 plays, run one of these. And, you know, that's the run pass option, right? And so based on how the defense is lined up, and, you know, Arkansas is a team that's going to try to win the trenches, and, you know, they're on scholarship too. And, you know, they play a smash mouth running style of offense. And so, you know, they have some capability of stopping that on defense that, you know, and I'm not going to say Coker always makes the best decisions with the ball, but, you know, apparently he saw something that led him to believe that you know, passing was the better option than the running.
Man, you got to give this to me. We've been watching football a long time. You've run the ball for 6 out of 7 plays for over 5 yards a carry. You're 2nd and 5 at the 8. You can get a 1st and goal at the 3.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I hear what you're saying. Well, I hear what you're saying. That's fine, but I want to be careful how much I give you, though. I mean, you sit there and you're trying to say someone's trying to be cute. Well, who's trying to be cute, right? Because it's a run pass option. And so let's not go and marry ourselves to one play that we can tell that's not going to work based on the way they're lined up. Let's have two plays. And so if you want to talk about, well, let's have a run-run option, okay, then that's a conversation. But I don't know if just, you know, kind of out of the gate insulting, you know, somebody trying to be cute, I don't know if that's the right way of looking at it. You know, we looked at, you know, we've got two different opportunities to attack how they line up. And, you know, if we think that we're going to – if they think we're going to run, then sort of the opposite of that is to pass. And, you know, let's not discount also that we're inside the 20, and so it's easier to defense, you know, a smaller space. And so
– you haven't shown you can stop it. I mean, we can agree to disagree. If you're a physical football team and you're second and five at the eight and you've run the ball down their throats that much – then you should say, I'm gonna run the ball three times. I'm gonna hand it to Nicewinder. I could tell Arkansas, we're gonna hand it to Nicewinder three times straight behind Ryan Kelly's butt at the five. And I guarantee you we could get on three downs, we could get 5 yards if I even told them what we were doing because of what we had done up until that point on the drive. So I just think it was bad calls by Jake Coker. And I didn't hear his press conference. So that explains a lot to me. Because as you said, Jake Coker made several poor decisions with the ball today or within the game. And so I will say, because he called pass plays, if that's what occurred, let's just quickly go to those two plays for a second, because this is important too. And I want your thoughts. Sure. So on second and five at the eight, when he chose to throw the ball to Calvin Ridley, who was being grabbed on his jersey, when you go back and watch the tape, he only looks at Calvin Ridley. He doesn't look at his other two receivers. And so over on the left, you've got Ardarius Stewart and somebody else. And Ardarius Stewart is the outside guy. And they basically do a cross pattern. Ardarius Stewart comes over to the goal line. He is wide open, David. I mean, he's immediately wide open. If Jake Coker would have just looked to the left at all, he would have had like the easiest touchdown pass he's ever thrown, because both DBs covered the other wide receiver. And so I was screaming at the television because I'm like, okay, I wish you would have run the ball. But there, you just looked at Calvin Ridley and you didn't even look to the left side of the field. And real quick before you comment, on third down, when he threw into double coverage to O.J. Howard to the right side, he did the same thing. This time he had two different receivers on the left. The inside guy was once again wide open because they had screwed it up on the play before, and he could have thrown another touchdown pass to the left. And right. Both times he didn't even look over there.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and so my thought on that is not going to be satisfying by any stretch of the imagination. But we're talking about a guy who's making his fifth start in college football. And so, you know, what do? You give him a run pass option and there are two plays, and the pass probably has a go-to receiver. And so it's not like we're going to run a play with, you know, three receivers and you're going to check from one to two to three. It's probably it's a run or a hot pass. And, you know, again, we're trying to limit, you know, we can talk about, you know, he's occasionally suspect with his decision making. And so we're going to limit your decision making. You're going to go up to the line of scrimmage. You're going to read two things and make a run pass option. And if you select the pass option, you're going to a hot receiver. And so you're not going to drop back and look and survey the field and all that. You're going to go to a hot. And that, I mean,
like I hear what you're saying, man. I hear what you're saying. And this is why people listen to this show. I'm just saying, from as long as he's played quarterback in Mobile, Alabama, right? I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is, and you're probably correct, that they said run or hot read. And so if I'm the coaching staff, because I'm not, and I don't get paid what they get paid, when I go back and watch that film, I'm changing that for the next week's game. It will no longer be a pass run option to a hot read, because I am Coach Saban and I'll be screaming at the TV because the wide receiver was open at the goal line to the left twice in a row and my quarterback didn't see it. Something will change for the next week's game based on what I saw there twice in a row at the goal line, which would have put us up 10-0. So I guess what I'm saying is, what's so frustrating to me, yes, he's a gutsy kid. Yes, they overcame adversity. Yes, sure, they dominated the game. All those things we'll talk about in a minute. But what, but why people listen to the show is that we're not the casual fans. And so I'm saying that we could have been up 10-0 at the start of the second quarter with 11 minutes time of possession, taking their will away from them, and the second string kids are playing in the fourth quarter. That's what frustrates me.
No. I'm with you. And so I share the frustration. I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater on this one. And I don't think that you are either. I've just read a dozen articles over the last, 2 days where, everyone's woe is me on the offense, and they're just not paying attention. There's a lot of good in this offense. There's some tweaks that need to be made. And maybe a tweak is, okay, we're just going to be more physical here at the line of scrimmage in the red zone, in those types of situations. And if we're not going to score, we're at least going to bloody somebody's nose. And,
we'll turn the ball over with our phenomenal defense, and we'll give it to them at the two, right? And we'll say, drive it 98 yards on us.
And yeah, exactly. And so, you start the game with, and I can't remember which is the right order. We had a 13 play drive and then a 14 play drive. And so, those are your two opening possessions. Like you said, 11 minutes in the first quarter, which is, just about all of it. There's no reason in the world, if you drive the field twice and you have that many plays, there's no reason in the world that you shouldn't have a touchdown. And so the fact that what's that, 27 plays? And
yeah, 13 plays on the first one, 11 on the second, or 14 on the second one. And so to your point, 27 plays. And I guess
you would ask that. 14 points, right?
Yes. Okay, well, right? at least 10, right?
Well, yeah, you split the difference and give it 10. But I'm just saying, there was an opportunity there that could have been 14 points.
Well, you and I sat there in Dallas with, drinks in our hand, thanks to the non-SEC venue, and we watched a Jay Coker in his first game at Alabama go into his second or third receiver in the progressions. So I guess what's frustrating is I saw a kid in his first start at Alabama with an ability to go to his second or third receiver. I think the kid's got a strong arm. I think the kid is gutsy. I love how he pulls the ball down. I love how he doesn't slide. I love how he overcomes adversity. He needs to stop throwing on his back foot.
Yes.
That should be a cardinal rule of quarterbacks. Every time he does it, he throws a pick. But I saw a quarterback against Wisconsin throw to his third receiver in the progression, dragging across the middle for a 20-yard completion. So I know he can do it. And so then I see him at the goal line, and that wasn't the only time in that game where I saw him just go to his number one receiver. So I guess going back to your question, I want the head coach and the offensive coordinator, I want to know if, in other words, I'm wondering how much of the game is a pass run option with the pass option being a go to your hot. Because when that happened on the second drive of the game, and now we're only up 3-0, I said, I'm going to start watching for it. And I saw many more plays, David, where he went to his first receiver and he didn't even look away to somebody else.
Well, I think when you have, all I've got is speculation, right? I think when you're between the 20s and you've had, the opening game of the season, maybe you've had more time to prep. I don't know. But you take the middle of the field and you are running a pass play. Then you have the opportunity to kind of progress through the receivers. When you're going up to the line of scrimmage and you're making the decision of run or pass, then you're more likely with, and I hate to call him young because he's a fifth year senior, but an inexperienced quarterback, you limit their opportunity to make decisions. And so I think if now when he goes up to, the next series or next week, right, between the 20s, we may see him receiver one, receiver two, go back to three. Now look at one again. I mean, we may see that in the middle of the field. I think in the red zone, tougher to defend anyways. We know that Arkansas can get after a quarterback. that we're gonna try to hit something quick. And I mean, how many times last year did we try to hit Amari quick on those types of plays? And so I think that we're trying to kind of carve Ridley into a similar type of role. And so, you know, go to him hot, let him make a move. I think that was the mindset. Like I said, next week between the 20s, we may see him cycle through some progressions. I just think on the goal line, I don't know, maybe by the end of the season we see that, but you know, obviously we didn't see it Saturday, and it contributes. I don't know if it's the cause of the confusion or the frustration, but it certainly contributes to the frustration.
Oh, sure. And so, you know, let's go to the third. And the reason I mentioned that, man, is because it would have been all about the psyche. These are young kids. And you would have been, hey, we're dominating you 10 to nothing. It wouldn't be offensive line. I know you're gassed because you've been on the field for 27 plays and we're only up 3-0. Right. And so then we come back with the third drive. Okay. And the very first play, Derrick Henry, I'm going to rush for 12 yards to the 34. Mm-hmm. The very next play, I'm going to rush for 5 yards. So once again, okay, second and 5 at the 39-yard line. To your point, you got a kid in his fifth start. You got a kid who's fragile. You got a kid who's thrown interceptions. So on that pass, deep pass interception, I kind of want to know, okay, second and 5. I know you can't run the ball every time, but I told you how we dominated them on the second drive, right? We come back on the third drive. The first two plays, we rushed for 12 yards and 5 yards. So now we're second and 5 at the 39. I just think we should have pounded them more. I guess I'm saying this game should have set up for a game like LSU had against Florida one year where they went for it 4 times on fourth down and they just up and down the field. I guess I wanted to see a Mark Ingram Wildcat South Carolina type of game, because when I go look at the stats, it's like, oh my gosh, every rush is over 5 yards. I almost wanted to say, keep running the ball till you can't get 5 yards on a carry. Maybe that's what I'm saying, is just keep the pass in your back pocket, because guess what? You've run the ball 10 times in a row for 5 yards each time, and they haven't stopped you yet.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. No, I hear you. And there's a part of me that does agree with that. There's a question, and look, it's a rhetorical question, because, you know, we're not going to know. But, you know, we can't get in the heads of our own coaches, much less, you know, other teams, right? And so, but there's a part of me that just wonders, are we able to knock off the 5 yards per carry because we are at least also trying to throw the ball? I mean, if we're, you know, they're gonna crowd the box. They know how to stop a running attack. Are we throwing enough? And again, rhetorical question: are we throwing enough to keep them honest? That's what allows us to keep getting the 5 yards. If we eschew the passing game, do we go down to 2 yards a carry immediately? And I don't know the answer to that question.
I'm with you. I just, if you go back and look at that first 13 play drive, we threw the ball 4 times. On the 14 play drive, we didn't throw the ball to the last 3 plays before the missed field goal. So going into that third series, we've basically run the ball 25 times and we've thrown it about 6.
Yeah.
So we've kind of shown our hand, and It just set up to me like a game like they just couldn't stop us. And so I just wanted them to say uncle quicker. And, you know, maybe that's my frustration. Give me your thoughts. What else jumps out at you on offense there?
Well, you know, I mean, clearly Calvin Ridley is going to be the go-to guy in the offense. I think he's definitely has emerged. We're going to him more and more.
Real quick, I'm sorry, let me jump in, because they showed that Calvin Ridley play action pass a couple times, right? Is it because he's a better route runner? Do you think he's a better route runner than the Ardarius, not to pick on Ardarius, sure, okay, but Calvin Ridley's a young kid. He was the number one receiver coming out of high school, just like Julio was when Julio came out, okay? But Ardarius was a very well-respected 4-star receiver. Is Calvin just the best route runner on the team? Because the move he made on the play against a true freshman, by the way, which was hilarious, was a good move. Could Ardarius has ran some go routes already. Could Ardarius or could anybody else on our roster right now had run? Could anybody else run the route that he did to be so wide open? Is my question.
Well, I mean, yeah, I want to say yes. I mean, it was a really nice move he put on the guy, and then was able to accelerate and create some separation. And I mean, he made it look so easy that you want to say, yeah, other guys could do that. You know, Drake, I imagine could do something like that. But could Ardarius? I mean, yeah, he probably could.
I don't want to pick on Ardarius, just anybody. Because my question is the way he ran that route. I mean, you and I both know some guys are just good route runners, right? And I'm just wondering, is he maybe just a really, really good route runner?
Well, I think so, right? Because, you know, and look, and you and I feel differently about Kiffin, but I think at the end of the day, we both have to agree that at least in some respects, he's a pretty good coach, and he's played, he has seen some very good receivers and very talented players, you know, at his time at USC and his time at Alabama. And so when he comes in fall camp and just has glowing commentary on Calvin Ridley, I mean, you have to put a little stock in, you know, put some stock in that, right? And so, you know, he's been around all the other guys, and he hasn't talked about All-America and Blitnikoff level talent, but he sure as hell made that comment about Calvin. And so you have to think, you know what, maybe there is a little extra it factor on this kid, and maybe that's what we're starting to see.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that's the case. But it was a great call. Obviously, I just, you know, when I saw it, I was like, okay, you know, we've tried some deep passes, right? We definitely have not completed as, you know, nearly, we haven't completed a high percentage of them yet. And so I was just kind of curious, you know, your thoughts on that. What else jumped out at you on the offensive side of the ball? I want to quickly get your take on some of the blocking schemes that we did on some of the runs. I also think because we were dominating the run so much, I would have liked to have seen Brandon Green was on the starting lineup as a second tight end.
Yep.
But I don't think him and Nicewander was in the game as much as I would have liked. Especially down there in the red zone when I thought we should have run the ball more. I wish we'd have just come in a heavy package and just said, we're going to blow you away. But when we tried to pull Alphonse Taylor, he really had some – how can I say this? Alphonse Taylor did a better job at right guard when he would pull to the right and go around Dominic Jackson and do a short pull. Mm-hmm. But when we tried to pull him to the left, we really didn't have success versus Piersbacher. The only two players I saw pull in the game was Taylor and Piersbacher. And I know Saban has talked about Piersbacher after the game. I was really impressed with him on pulling. I think he is our – kind of like we said with Barrett Jones, when Barrett Jones could even pull at the center position – Piersbacher seems by far our best pulling lineman on the starting five.
Yeah. You know, I agree with that. And you know, it's something that a lot of fans don't think about, but there are differences in playing and, you know, I guess some differences are obvious, but then, you know, you play on the left side, you play on the right side. Some players are just, you know, right-handed and left-handed, right? And so some players are, you know, ambidextrous and they play ambidextrous. Some players are going to be better to their right and better to their left. And, you know, to your point, you know, last year, you know, Shank saw some time at left guard and it kind of fell out of the rotation. This season he's at right guard. You know, your point is that looks like he looks cleaner pulling to the right
than the left. Absolutely.
Yeah, I wonder if, I mean, literally and figuratively, if he's just a better right-handed player.
Well, Piersbacher was asked to do both in the game, and for a new starter, he just looked really, really good pulling. And you know, I think we're going to see more traps tactics and stuff incorporated in the game, because he just the go-to play on the run, I think a play that we're going to see more and more until teams stop it, is where they took Alphonse Taylor and Dominic Jackson on the right, and they just said, we want you to crash down inside, and we're going to sweep Pierce Bakker around the right tackle, and we're going to let him clean up the mess.
Yep.
And a couple of times on the slow-mo, he came around, and he just cleanly just took his time, almost like a running back who is patient. He just patiently waited for Alphonse and Dominic to do their job. And then a couple times he didn't just chip one guy, but he even got to a second guy on a higher level. And it was awesome that sometimes he even took two players on one play.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a little more mobile. He's a guy that has spent a little bit of time at left tackle. And so, you know, in sort of the hierarchy of your offensive line positions, he's going to be one of your more athletic guys. And so that makes him a real versatile player. He probably could play any of the five positions. And so you don't always have guys that can do that. I think he probably could. He's going to be a little more athletic, a little more mobile. And so getting him out, you know, in space pulling, you know, I think he has a lot of talent in that regard. And so, yeah, you know, sometimes, you know, your assignment is chip and scrape and get to the second level. And some guys, all they can do is get to the chip and they kind of don't do the scrape and second level. And Pierce Bakker, is a player that seems that he can do both.
Well, hey, tell me what else jumps out at you on offense before I touch on another item.
Yeah, I've got, you know, just kind of one more and Kenyon Drake. You know, coach was asked about him last week and said, you know, Kenyon's a player that needs to take what the defense gives. He needs to run the play that's called instead of trying to, you know, back it out and you know, try to score a home run every time. And I just saw, and we've seen years past where, you know, that would kind of go in one ear and out the other with a guy like Drake. And you know, what I saw Saturday is him taking that message to heart, sticking with a play. If nothing was there, you could almost see him sort of resign himself to lower his shoulder and plow in, and he would pick up 3, 4, 5 yards. And so, you know, that next, you know, extra burst, instead of pulling out and coming back around and maybe losing a yard, he was able to pick up, you know, 2, 3, 4 yards. And I'm still, you know, bullish on Drake. You know, he's going to bust out on somebody and have a pretty big day.
Yeah, he did seem to have a couple shifty runs where I think he was able to make something out of nothing that Derrick Henry would not have been able to do. You know, he just brings a different package to the table. I will tell you that, you know, and I don't want to underscore what Derrick Henry did with his 27 carries. I think it's clearly obvious that Derrick Henry is one of those backs because of just how he runs that, you know, every player would like the rock so many times, but I think Derrick Henry has shown consistently now 2 weeks in a row that he needs 20 plus carries to just really put together the type of game that you're going to get out of Derrick Henry. Maybe the big beast who, you know, flips a 1,000-pound tire at will in the summer just needs to just have the middle linebacker have to tackle him 13 times for Arkansas before he just says uncle. I mean, my point is he's such a big boy, you know, it's like a battering ram. Maybe he just needs to have the ball 20, 25 carries a game. And so each carry is going to come easier, right? Because he's just wearing the crap out of the defense.
I agree with you. You know, you take a big back like that, you know, they should get better as the game goes on. He's got to have some want to in terms of running physical. And I saw more of that on Saturday, you know, coming off the Georgia game. I think that's good. And so he's had sort of two physical outings in a row. And, you know, is it and so for my money, is it the chicken or the egg? Is it physical because he has more carries? Is he getting more carries because he's playing physical? I mean, I don't know. I'm seeing physicality, you know, on carries, you know, 1 through 8, just as I am on, you know, 21 through 26, right? And so I think that I think he's playing with a little more want to and running behind his pads, being his own lead blocker, all the cliches that you know, are cliches for a reason, right? I think we're seeing that, and that I think is him contributing to him getting more carries.
Well, I want to think it's the former. I want to think it's just because, and I agree with your want to comment, but I also just want to think that, you know, he's a big man. You just got to feed the man, you know, several times. And I think he's the kind of back that if you get him out there 10 or 12 carries, it's just not going to have the same kind of result. I also think, to be fair to Kenyon Drake, I want to see Kenyon Drake getting the ball 10 carries.
Sure.
I don't think 7 carries gets it done for him either. With a boy with his talent, I think you've got to get more carries his way as well. I found it interesting, you know, looking at the distribution for Kenyon Drake. We threw Kenyon Drake on a 1st and 10 at the 40. We threw him on 1st and 15, in which he got 18 yards, which was nice. We did a second down. So 3, 4, 5 times we threw Kenyon Drake's way. So 5 times from a pass distribution, we tried to get the ball to Kenyon, and he was able, you know, he was able to catch all 5 of those. So he didn't miss any passes, and he got 37 yards on that. But I just don't think 7 carries is enough to really get him into the ball game. He's such a versatile player. You know, I think he's got to get a few more carries.
Yeah, and I think he will. I think we'll settle into the right role for Kenyon. Anything else on offense, or you want to talk mini game balls?
You know, very quickly, because I want your take on your man, O.J. Howard. I stayed up entirely too late because I thought California was going to upset the undeserving of a number 5 ranking Utah Utes. And so I watched California throw to their tight end, a 5th-year senior, Steven Anderson. And I had to go look up Steven because he looked like a beast as he drugged people down the field. Well, he's 6'3", 230 pounds. But literally, he was a mismatch for the safety who was bigger than any safeties we have, and he proceeded to line up at the tight end position, and he decided to just do a go route and just go down the hash, and the quarterback threw him the ball, and the guy tackling him was a redshirt senior, Tevin Carter, 6'1", 215, because I just looked him up. So not a small kid. And the kid just couldn't, you know, he carried him 5 yards after the kid had already gained like 15 yards. My point is, he was the best option that California had, and Utah couldn't stop him, and he's 230 pounds. And I'm sitting here looking, and I'm saying, O.J. Howard had 3 receptions for 17 yards. And when you go back and look at the 24 passes that Jake Coker completed, only 5 of them did he even attempt to go to O.J. One was in double coverage. So O.J. Howard completed 3, caught 3 of those 5 passes. But, David, they were in the flats. They were out wide by the sideline, right? Why aren't we lining this kid up at the you know, right next to the tackle and just sending him on a, you know, just sending him on a little short slant right across the middle, just like California did? I mean, I'm watching this California tight end just tear up Utah inside. He got like 100 yards rush, 100 yards receptions on 9 passes. And I'm like, we got O.J. Howard. We're not using O.J. Howard the way we should a quarterback in his 5th start. So I just wanted you to talk to me for that for a second, because O.J. Howard is just not being utilized like O.J. Howard should be utilized.
Well, yeah, I'll give you that. And, you know, I asked the question last week, is O.J. Howard just kind of be lost to history? You know, a player that, you know, perpetually was sort of underutilized. And, you know, I think that's a fair question. And as much as I hate to ask it, you know, I can't not ask it. You know, I think it's, you know, the golf kid at Cal is, I mean, he's a damn good quarterback. And so some of the things that they can ask him to do, it's not fair that we can ask Coker to do. And so, you know, I don't want to go too far.
You and I could line up at quarterback and throw the ball right in front of us over the center, who is 6'6", 245 pounds. You and I could do that. For you and I could throw the ball without a spiral from 10 yards to the kid.
Yeah, I know that sounds so easy, but you know, throwing over the middle of a defense and having the confidence to do that and lay the ball in there just right, you know, that's not as easy as it sounds. And so, I mean, you know, your bottom line point is fair. I mean, could we use OJ better and more? And does he have an outsized talent relative to how we're using him? Yeah. Yeah, he really does. And it's something that we kind of kidded about. When was it last year? You know, do we have too many talented players? And, you know, of course you can never have too many talented players, but you start trying to spread the ball and give everyone the amount of touches that you think that they should have. I mean, you know, you've given 30 touches to our two running backs. And so, you know, you start distributing the ball a little bit and, you know, before you know it, we're going to need 120, you know, plays, you know, and all of them, you know, working to perfection for, you know, for everyone to kind of get the right distribution. So, you know, somewhere in there is a balance and somewhere in there is an opportunity for OJ to get more plays. I do agree with that.
All right. After seeing that late night game and seeing how they use the kid who's, you know, 3 inches shorter than our man, you know, after seeing what he did in that LSU game and showing the physicality and the elusiveness and the speed, you know, it continues to dumbfound me.
Well, no, and I've read somewhere that, you know, that NFL scouts are considering, you know, Howard may have a first round grade. And you think about, gosh, you know, has he really performed at a first round grade level on, you know, for us? And so maybe he hasn't. His blocking has significantly improved, and he's actually, you know, by NFL scouts, he's rated pretty well as a blocker. And his athletic, you know, untapped athletic potential is just off the charts. And so, you know, you take a kid like OJ in the combine, and he's gonna blow everyone away. And so he could very easily be viewed as a successful pass catching tight end at the next level. And, you know, we very easily, and we talk about guys this way sometimes, he could very easily be the kind of guy that goes to the NFL and just blows up. And we just leave and we just scratch our heads like, man, that he was on our team, this guy.
I got to tell you, man, I that's where I'm putting my chips right now.
Yeah.
I'm putting my chips that other tight ends are going to stay the heck away from Alabama because we don't know how to use the tight ends. I'm throwing that out there. That's just where I'm putting my chips right this second.
Well,
we haven't had a tight end with his size and his ability to play as a big wide receiver in the slot before him really for a long time. And, you know, I don't think there's some reason why he's not being utilized, and that game was set up nicely for it. You're running the ball down their throats. You play action. You drop it over to the tight end, and you just say run between the two hashes and make the two safeties hog tie you. And didn't see it.
Well, I think part of the frustration is that we do know how to use tight ends. I mean, we've had a lot of, you know, successful tight ends, and they have not been this talented. But their contribution, I mean, you know, Vogler is an example. Colin Peak is an example. I mean, there's you know, Preston Dial, right? I mean, you know, Brad Smelly. I mean, all of these guys made week in, week out contributions to the team. None of them was the best receiver. None of them, you know, really had a legit shot athletically to compete at the next level. But they all contributed to the game plan. And so it's like, you're too pretty, you know, it's like, well, we don't know what to do with you because you're a different class of tight end. And it's like, let's not overthink the room, guys. Let's do the same stuff with him as we did with the others.
He'll just do it a little better than the Brian Vogler's of the world, right?
Well, you know what? Let's do the same shit. Let's do the exact same stuff. And then guess what? Let his athleticism do the separation.
Yes.
We don't have to do the separation with the play call. Let's run the same stuff and let his athleticism separate himself. That's the frustrating part.
I'm with you.
I mean, how many years have we talked about Michael Williams? Run the same stinking stuff with OJ that we ran with Michael Williams. I mean, how many touchdowns did he catch in his career, right? I mean,
a lot. Well, he had a lot more opportunities than it seems like OJ's getting, correct? Yeah.
And so let's just run the same stuff with him.
No, that's fair. Well, hey, my game ball won't take very long. I talked about him earlier, but I'm giving it to my boy Ross at left guard. Just under the radar guy. He's a big, ugly, new starter at a key position. And, you know, we talked about it earlier. I think this kid is, if he stays healthy, this kid is going to continue to blossom for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think that's a good selection. I like the way he played, and he has, you know, a significant amount of upside for us. I'm going to go, and so I'm going to play the role of Tommy, and I'm going to break the mini game ball, but I'm going to go with Jacob Coker, the running back. He, you know, and I know we ran a couple, you know, opportunities for him to run the ball. He scrambled a couple times. He seems to make good decisions running the ball. I wish he made decisions passing as well as he does running, because he always seems to, and he's not fleet of foot. No one's going to, you know, think he's Michael Vick or anything like that. I'm not,
but he plants his foot the right way and takes the right hole.
He does. He does. And in a lot of regards, it reminds me a little bit of AJ McCarron, that, you know, McCarron wasn't going to light anybody up running the ball, but when he got out, he knew when to pick his spots. And Jacob, I think, is a little more willing than maybe McCarron was. He's a little thicker, a little bigger guy, but he makes good decisions running the ball. And I should have looked up his numbers, but you know, he had you know, a handful of runs, and always seemed to be moving the ball, move the chains with his feet a couple times. I just was really impressed with what he was doing with his legs. And so that is, you know, I want to be careful. I'm not overselling that. That's a dynamic that the defenses need to prepare for. I'm not going to go that far, but you know, he has the ability to get himself out of trouble and to help move the chains. I think there's a tool there that could serve the Tide well.
Well, he is 6'5", 230, and your point cannot be underscored, because he had 7 carries for 36 yards.
Yeah, there you go.
So it's not like it was 16 yards, right? He had 40 yards with one carry going 15 yards. And so, and I can't remember what his 40 time was. And so I was trying to look it up real quick. But it's actually a lot faster than you would have thought, than you and I would have thought. And at 6'5", 230, I think his wheels are pretty decent, and so when you put a 230-pound quarterback that's 6'5" who can run a little bit, I think that plays a role there.
Yeah. Well, you flipped the field. What did you see on defense?
You know, the first thing I have to jump out on defense is something else that I have been screaming for all year. We haven't seen it. I don't know why, but I'm glad we finally did. We got to see Tim Williams and Rashawn Evans. I'm sorry, I had to go there before you could take it. So Rashawn Evans and Tim Williams were on the field together, and it was on third down. You didn't see Tim on first down. You didn't see Tim on second down. You saw them together on third down. And what's key about this, David, real quick, if you'll allow me to indulge for a second, is we talked about this in the preseason, and we said, who is our get you off the field on third down linebackers? And we talked about who we thought it was. And if you recall, one of the names I gave you is maybe it's Rashawn Evans. Well, what I thought was so key here is later in the game, they lined him up with his hand in the dirt. But what I really, really liked is how they showed him early in the game. Early in the game, they had him lined up like a CJ Mosley right behind the big uglies, standing up 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And Tim Williams was in his usual place in the dirt on the left side over here, but Rashawn Evans got to just go where he wanted to go. And I thought that was awesome with his speed and his tenacity. Just kind of putting him in the middle next to your boy Harrison. That's something else I want to mention before you take it. Having 32 and 15 on the field.
Yeah.
having Tim Williams, okay, I'll say this a different way. Coaches, make a note. You need to have 15, 32, and 56 on the field when it's third and five or greater for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I really, really like what we saw out of Tim Williams. I know that, you know, the players on the team have really, really talked highly of him. And, you know, he kind of needs to get it together. And he appears to be pulling it together. I mean, he saw action in the first, you know, in the first quarter. He saw action early. And he reminds me of, you know, we saw it last week against Georgia. We saw it against Arkansas here where, I mean, he can go to town on the left tackle, and he can make that left tackle have a bad day. And it reminded me a little bit of the Striker kid for Oklahoma when we played them a couple of years ago, that he would just line up outside the tackle, and you could just tell that this is not going to go well. And I think if we did that enough times in a game, that we could really get into the head of some left tackles. I really believe that. And I think there's value in doing that early and doing that often, because that can just really, you know, you think of left tackles, you know, the best linemen, and maybe the center is the second best. And, you know, you start messing with their mind early. I like the opportunities that opens up. And so I think we're going to see more and more Tim Williams.
Well, what was so – and you can't sell my boy Rashawn Evans short. We got to come back to him in a second. But Tim Williams is listed third on the depth chart at the Jack linebacker position for all the listeners, right? And so when you look at Tim Williams, he is 6'4", 230 pounds. Well, first string is Denzel Duvall at 6'2", 252 pounds. We know that Denzel Duvall lines up on the line of scrimmage a lot as the fourth guy with his hand in the dirt, right, or up in the air, but he's anchoring one of those lines. He's anchoring that left side. And so what's so interesting to me is we've got a lot of good pass rushers, but they're putting Tim Williams in a situation where he can be successful, because the boy is not going to hold the left tackle up with one hand and grab the running back with the other. He's not going to hold the point of attack. He's 230 pounds.
No.
And so is Rashawn Evans. Rashawn Evans is not going to be that guy either. Rashawn Evans is 225 pounds. So what I like is we're putting – you and I talked about this at the end of the year. Last year against Auburn, it drove me crazy. Not until the end of the game. Our buddy Eric sitting next to a season ticket holder. Him and I talked about this in the Auburn game. Not until the very end of the game in the fourth quarter did we bring Tim Williams and Rashawn Evans on each end with their hand in the dirt. And as soon as we did it, that mobile quarterback got sacked. That mobile quarterback had nowhere to go with those two kids. So no offense to all of our great players that we have, but we sat there in the Auburn game last year and said, why have we not seen this sooner?
Yep.
And I don't know why we haven't seen it in the Wisconsin game, et cetera. And I don't know why Rashawn Evans is getting more playing time now than he was, but the coaches should have seen last year at the end of the season that on third and long, if you put those two kids on the outside, it's going to cause huge fits. Because they are Siamese twins. They are the same player, one on the left and one on the right, and they bring the same thing to the table.
Yeah, I think Rashawn has a little more in terms of what he can do, not, you know, just in sort of standard play, not rushing. But
no, I'm just saying pass rushing. I'm just saying keep the quarterback in the pocket and don't let the quarterback scramble and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, pass rushing. I agree, and you know, I think, you know, not to preview the A&M too early, but I think this next week stands up is a pretty good opportunity for us to see both of those guys, you know, getting after the quarterback, and I think us trying to apply some pretty steady pressure all day long. I expect to see that.
And Ronnie Harrison continues to be brought in on third downs, yep. And he gets to, and they sit him down in the box, right? And they let him kind of cover the middle. And so what was so huge in this game is you had Tim Williams with his hand in the dirt. This speaks to your point about what Rashawn Evans' skill set is, right? Because Tim Williams was had his hand in the dirt. You go do what you do. You go hunt. Rashawn Evans got to stand on his, you know, got to stand up right behind the beast. And him and Ronnie Harrison stood there next to the big uglies. And they were able to improvise a little bit. It was kind of like watching arena football a little bit as far as how what those two guys were doing as far as how they were lined up. They weren't 5 yards off the line. They were right behind the line of scrimmage. And Ronnie Harrison really wasn't coming after the quarterback. But I think we have found the two guys in the middle, because what was so great is Reggie Ragland, who, Reggie, we hadn't forgot about you because you played like a warrior. It was great seeing Reggie Ragland get to come off the field every third down and long. It was great saying, we don't need you, Biggin. Come on. We don't need you. Come to the sideline. We got some other guys.
Yeah, it was good for the right reasons, right? And you know, we got a longtime listener. You know, I was working out earlier today, and you know, the thought kind of hit me last week, and it just didn't feel right. Thought hit me today, and right about that time, I got a message from a longtime listener saying, if you guys haven't done it yet, you've got to start doing it. I think Tommy, we'll just do an on here vote between you and me, but I think it's time to break out the Ragland report. What do you think?
Man, I don't know, man. That's a high standard to give that name out. We might have to. I mean, he's a good player and all now, but we've only put someone's last name in front of the word report now one time before. So, I don't know about that, but he definitely played well. You know. It looks, I'm hoping it was just a shoulder stinger. It sounds like you've looked into a few more things today. Was it just a shoulder stinger that he got early in the game?
Yeah, it was. And so
his shoulder didn't pop out or anything.
No, it was just a stinger. And saw the interview that he did. I'm gonna implore you to check that out. I think you will like him. Not that to say that you don't, but I think that the seriousness that he portrays in his interview, I mean, it's like he is a central casting middle linebacker,
workmanlike, right? Just got his lunch pail.
And so but he's serious and he's to the point. And they asked him about they asked him about his shoulder, and he said it's just a stinger. Worked it out. I came back in. I wasn't not going to play for my team. And it's like, that is just so refreshing to hear a player to say that. And he played so well. He was physical all over the field. He did actually, one of the things that Arkansas did, and they made me nervous when I first saw it, but they came out early in the game and split out their tight ends. And I think it was their first play from scrimmage. They split out their tight ends, and then all of a sudden Ragland and Dylan Lee are out in space. And I'm like, man, whoa, they're reading somebody's mail on that, because if they come out and do that all day long, not only are they going to clear up the middle, but they're going to create some mismatches with those linebackers. And fortunately, they did not come back to that often, but Ragland was tight in coverage. The times that he had to, I thought that was good, making plays all over the field. And the sack and the batted ball, but just what really just stands out to me, and it's when the little things start to take root, and I've got an article that's going to post on Bama Hammer that I kind of elaborate on this, but when the little things that a team does start to take root, that's when you know you've got good coaching and you've got a team that potentially can really do something. And when Ragland not only was tackling the quarterback, but had the wherewithal to, you know, hey, the emphasis is on turnovers, and to just bat that ball out, and it goes out of bounds short of the first down. And so he bats that ball out mid-tackle, and it's the ball that doesn't go across the first down line. Man, those are the types of things that earn you the report after your name.
Well, I'm glad to hear it was a stinger, because I couldn't tell whether he had put a brace on the sideline under that little tent thing that the, you know, gave the sideline reporter something to spend her time on. I couldn't tell if the shoulder brace was on before or not, because it looks like he had one on the other side as well. But I like that he came back in, and
you couldn't tell it in his play. I mean, he was laying licks. He did not seem tentative or anything. So, I mean,
well, he once again, there was one particular tackle where, you know, he just brought that physicality that, you know, I just miss from defenses, because not enough guys tackle like they're supposed to. And, you know, it sends a message. And maybe it sends a message because not enough people in the back seven of defenses tackle the way they're supposed to anymore. And when you knock somebody on their butt, it sends a message. And it, and people listen, and it wakes them up.
Yep. And he is a message. He is nothing if not a message deliverer. And it's fun to watch him play. Hey, I'm gonna jump all over Eddie Jackson. Man, dude is making plays all over the field. It seemed like there was one sequence where back to back, he made a play deep in the secondary. Is the corner coming over, or is the safety coming over? And on the very next play, he was crashing the box, helping make the tackle. At the line of scrimmage. And you think, man, that is two plays back to back where he is doing two uniquely different things, and damn, he's doing them well. Eddie Jackson, we've talked about other guys, you know, Nick Perry a little bit last year, getting comfortable in the role, and just he's playing with a level of comfort. Eddie Jackson is not only playing with a level of comfort, he is producing. He's not just filling a slot and not being a minus to the team, but he is being a plus to the team. And this defense is really coming into form. And it has a lot to do with getting some pass rushers and getting the secondary to gel. And Eddie Jackson is all about that.
No, he definitely, you know, he's definitely playing well. When you go back and look at the stat sheet and you see he had one solo and two assists, you kind of scratch your head, because for him to be all over the field, I mean – you know, wouldn't you have guessed he would have had more than one solo, two assist on the day?
Yeah, you know,
because it seems like he's all over the place.
Yeah,
right.
He was all over the place. You know, what did you equate him to, like a Kevin Jackson? You know, we'll show.
Yeah, I'm just surprised. I'm surprised by the stat line of just three tackles, based on what it seems like they're letting him. They're letting him move around all over the defense, and so the stat line just surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, well, don't forget the pick. He had a big pick, and yeah, I would have expected maybe more tackles the way that, you know, we saw him flashing, but, you know, definitely getting the pick, definitely making plays all over the field. I like what he's doing for us.
No, I do too. I just was curious about that, because when you go back and look at the stat line, his three tackles came in the second quarter. And so looking back at the stat line, he was not credited with a tackle after the second quarter. I will say on his interception real quick, had he not jumped in to help out Humphrey, it would have been a big game. Humphrey was beat. No offense to Humphrey. Humphrey was clearly beat on the play. It would have been a big game had Eddie Jackson not jumped in and intercepted the ball. And I think that speaks to what we talked about in the preseason about, you got a cornerback with some physicality who is very comfortable playing back there because he's a cornerback.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Anything else on, and I mean, there's a lot of things on defense. The defense was just outstanding all day long. Anything on defense that stood out to you, or do you want to go to mini game balls?
Man, there's really so many things that we could still talk about. There's a couple things I want to mention real quick.
Sure.
Dylan Lee got to play a lot more.
Yep.
Because Arkansas's base formation.
Yep.
And so Dylan Lee was on the field a lot. I found it interesting when Reggie Ragland came out with that shoulder stinger, that who they brought in next to Reuben Foster was Dylan Lee. And so I just was surprised that we didn't see Sean Dion Hamilton on those plays in Reggie's absence. Dylan Lee was moved over from the Sam linebacker to the Mike. And so I thought that was interesting that Dylan's number was called. I know he's been on some two deeps at middle linebacker, but I'm just surprised that he's the guy who got his number called, which I think might speak a little bit to the coach's comfort level with him on the field, even more than Sean Deon Hamilton.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it could have something to do with, they're going to flare out some of their tight end, you know, and again, they didn't do it all day, but they showed it early where they might flare out some tight ends. And so all things being equal, I might like Dylan Lee in coverage better than Sean Deon Hamilton. And I say that not knowing, because we've not seen Hamilton in coverage much, but that could have been a factor. I don't know, but and I've kind of been bullish on Dylan for a while. So, you know, I was kind of pleased to see that. I think Hamilton's going to be a great player too. So,
that's fair. I just noticed that. I just thought that was interesting. Other guy that I thought played well was Darren Payne. I think the freshman continues to get comfortable. I want to give Darren Lake a little credit. Darren Lake got some good play in this game. And he started, which was nice to see. And he had some good opportunities in the ball game, so I thought that was nice. So I want to give him a little props because he's been a patient guy at Alabama. And I just want to comment on him contributing to the team. And then I just want to, you talked about the Reggie Ragland report, man. Well, if you're going to try to throw that out, without trying to take me off guard here, we might have to come out with the Reed watch. Because Jaron Reed, continues to make some physical plays at the point of attack, which are just like mind-numbing. And it's no offense to A'shaun Robinson, but I think it was against Georgia. I saw Jaron Reed take the offensive lineman like you do with a blocking dummy on the practice field, and he held him up with his right arm. And he waited for the running back, and he pulled him down with his left arm.
Yep.
Well, this time there was a play where the center and the right guard tried to move him out of the way. They were not able to move him off the line of scrimmage. He did a spin move to get around him and got in on the tackle. And I was like, 600 pounds can't move him off the nose. It was just awesome.
Yeah. Jaron Reed's a special player. There's no doubt about it. And that's definitely a good call out. Some of the play in the trenches is hard to watch, but are hard to catch the detail. But Jaron Lee, he's a player.
It's just a different type of physicality.
Yep.
Than I think we've had with any other player at his position inside.
When Cody left, we spent the next couple of years, saying we need a Cody type player. Is Jaron Reed the Cody type player we've been missing?
But way more fit, way more athletic. That remains to be seen. But yes, I will tell you that Jaron Reed might be one of the biggest additions to this football team on defense. Getting him last year might be the biggest thing that they did on defense. And I'll put it this way. When they talk about the defensive line right now and how physical they are and how they can bring them all in and bring all these bodies in and how great they all are, that's true.
Sure.
No offense to A'shaun Robinson. But I think right now the most valuable player on the defensive line is Jaron Reed. Yeah. He might be the most valuable player on the defensive side of the ball right now. And you and I have talked about the middle of that defense, right? And magazines like to talk about the three levels. Well, guess what? If I had to line you up right now, I got Jaron Reed, Reggie Ragland, and Eddie Jackson.
Yes.
And guess what? The three of you in the middle, the sky's the limit, baby. Sky's the limit.
Damn, I'm excited now.
Give me your mini game ball.
Man, I am going. So I soft played him earlier because I didn't want to give away my good stuff. But I'm giving my game ball to my mini game ball to Rashawn Evans, and he earned. So there were in the fourth quarter there was a 3rd and 13, and I can't remember how much time was. You know, probably 6-7 minutes left on the clock, and it was a possession. You know, Arkansas was down. You know, whatever it is, the two scores. And it was the possession that said, look, if we're going to do this, we've got to do it now. And so that was sort of the load that they had on them at that time. And Rashawn Evans was on the right side of the defense, and it was his job to set the edge. And so he goes up and chips on the tackle, and he's really just setting his edge. And the running back comes out and just lays wood to Rashawn. I mean, knocks him on his ass. And Rashawn gets up, sprints to the right, back to his post, maintaining the edge. And so he gets knocked, you know, so he's helping someone out, kind of putting pressure on the tackle, gets knocked on his ass, gets back up, sprints out to the left, or sprints out to the right to, you know, to maintain setting the edge.
To make the quarterback turn around.
The play goes the other way. He sprints all the way across the field and makes the tackle on the other side of the formation. I said, there's my mini game ball right there for that effort and his speed. And it's one thing to have speed. It's another thing to feel comfortable on the field so that you can use your speed. And so we're seeing him be able to use his speed because he's feeling comfortable. And so the fact that he set the edge, he set it twice, and then made the play on the other side of the field. There's my mini game ball, Rashawn Evans.
Well, we do not know why we have not seen him more early. We did not see him really at all until the Georgia game, just a little bit.
Sure.
And so I don't know why he hasn't been out there, but on that play that you just mentioned, that was like, wow, there's a lot of guys on this team that can't make that play.
Yeah, I saw that, and I went back and I rewound it, and then I watched probably, you know, a few more minutes of the ball game, and that play was still in my mind. I went back and watched it again. I mean, the game was still on. I was like, no, I've got to go back and watch that play again. And so I went like back in time because I was watching the game in real time. I went back in time to watch that play again, because I just thought that is the level of effort. And, you know, some of the stuff, I mean, you can coach and you can get on guys and you can ride people's ass about, you know, having an effort. But there was a little bit there where, you know, you could say, oh, that was a great effort to get back up and go set the edge. And you could say that was a good effort. But then to sprint across the field and make the tackle, I mean, that is an upper tier effort. That is an upper tier talent.
It is. And you know, when they watch the film, right? I mean, for whatever reason, he hasn't played much until this point. That play right there is going to get him on the field more.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Well, I knew you were going to steal my mini game ball because I was going to give it to my boy Rashawn, because, you know, I've been ready to see him come out and spend some time with Tim Williams. And so I'm going to go ahead and throw out,
you can double it up if you've
No. I'm good. I'm going to go out and, you know, I mentioned some love to some other players. You know, I'm just going to say that as far as the defense goes, you know, I've touched on several names. I'm going to leave it at that. You know, I just like how this – I'll say this. I'll spend my mini game ball time on the podcast saying, I think we have established an identity on 3rd and long to get off the field.
Sure.
I like the chess pieces that we have aligned. I like who we're now putting in on 3rd and long to get off the field. And I like how Todd Blackledge at the end of the game – said that we were just slowly sucking the life out of Arkansas.
Yes. Yes.
That was awesome. All right, so tell me about special teams, man. Do you want to talk about the missed field goal? You want to talk about your boy getting his punting average up? What you want to talk about on special teams?
Well, you know, the bad and the good with the kicking, right? You know, JK let loose a couple of times. That was good to see. You know, so I'll kind of start there, and you can take us where you want to go next. But I was very pleased with him kicking the ball. You know, they did, you know, just barely get a hand on the kick or the ball, you know,
to prevent it was the right call, unfortunately.
It was, but there was a part of me. He is like a gazelle. He's got just the longest legs, and it's like, man, you go after him and there's a lot of leg there, and fortunately he was just able to sort of fold up like a chair and not get hurt. But that was the thing, as I watched it, I was like, man, that's a lot of leg in there. I don't want him to land the wrong way or anything, but he came out of that all right. That, to me, that was the most important thing.
Yeah, I was definitely a little bit worried on that play that, you know, that he was going to get hurt. That was definitely a concern of mine. I knew you couldn't say anything about kickoffs. They only kicked the ball off twice. Once they kicked it to the 11, and once they kicked it to the 6. So I knew you'd be good there. I do want to point out, you know, on the show that I think Damian Harris has found a role as a good decision maker who is not going to fumble the ball on kickoffs. I think we have successfully found a combination back there. I mean, I don't know if you noticed it, but at one point we had Mullaney and Damian Harris back there.
Yep.
And, you know, give me your quick thoughts on that. That's not who we started the season with on kickoff returns. There definitely has been some changes.
Yeah, there absolutely have. You know, I think that, you know, I think part of it is, you know, Mullaney's going to make good decisions. And so that's the part of it. I think another part is, you know, Damon Harris has some athleticism, and, you know, we need an opportunity to get him on the field and get him, you know, some touches, if you will. And so, you know, that's what we did there. I think the Ole Miss game, I mean, you know, it'll be a long time before I get over. I don't know that I ever get over the fact that, you know, two balls that should have, you know, again, if we didn't have a kickoff returner, we would have won that game. That's how poor the decisions that we made were. And so, and what's ironic is those are two of my favorite players, you know, Drake and Ardarius. And so I think they are just super talented. I want to see the ball in their hands, but not on kickoffs. They've broken me of that, not on kickoffs. And so, let's get them the ball in other ways. I do not want to see them back there. And so if we've got Damian and Mullaney, then I'm good with that.
Well, I find it interesting that Kenyon Drake and Cyrus, right, were the starters in the Wisconsin game, and we tried to sprinkle in the Chris Black, but our Darius Stewart did not have a stat on kickoff returns until that Ole Miss game.
Right.
And so it's interesting that we started with Kenyon and Cyrus, we tried Chris, we then tried our Darius, and I want to bring this up because the Damian thing's a new phenomenon, right? We just went to this Damian thing.
Yeah.
And I just mentioned it because it's another true freshman who is finding a role.
What else you got on special teams?
I just, you know, I got to mention your other freshman safety. You know, we don't really have a mini game ball on special teams, but, you know, I think we've got to, you know, we got to give some love to number 27. I think Sean, you know, just stayed at home. He did his job and made a nice play on that fake punt. Michael Nicewinder, to his credit, did a great job of setting the edge on the left side because, you know, on the right edge, I guess, for the offense, because he's the one that brought him back to Sean. Once again, another true freshman. We talked about Ronnie. We talked about Sean. We said those are the two names we're hearing behind Eddie. And just want to give some love to Sean and Michael on that fake punt.
Yeah, and those are the two guys, right? I think that you got to give them both some props on that. You know, Skarbinski, I think he wrote, you know, probably half a dozen articles, and I guess what harped on him, because he, you know, it chapped his ass a little bit, because every article that he wrote, he mentioned Bielema making, Brett Bielema making bad decisions on the punt. And I wonder if he just wasn't paying attention, because, you know, they punted on fourth and one, but we were in a punt safe. And so you think, well, if we're just going to go for it, then let's just go for it. But if we're going to fake a punt, I don't want to run my less athletic punter against their starting defense. And so probably that's the right call. And then on fourth and five, they run the fake because we had the return on rather than a punt safe. And so I don't know that it was as bad of a decision to do that as Skarbinski wants to say. I just don't know if he wasn't paying attention to kind of the plot line. But you know, the way Nicewander set the edge, and Becker came in there and Burgess Becker came in there and just kind of cleaned it up, that was fun to see. And like you said, another true freshman. So that was I really enjoyed seeing that. I think that was you know, there were, and you know, there's a lot of things you can laugh about on DuBose. And one of the things that he said that, you know, at the time we probably thought it was funny, but it just year after year, game after game, time after time, it sort of bears itself out. You know, a game or most games are going to hinge on about five plays. And this is one of the plays. You can take the big touchdown down the field, and you can take this one and
Eddie, you know, Jackson's play. Yep.
Eddie Jackson's play. And so, you know, you can come up with just a very small handful of plays that had a significant impact on the outcome of the game. And this is one of those plays. And that's two guys, you know, I got a kick out of, you know, that's a senior walk-on and a true freshman making that play. That's pretty cool.
No, it absolutely is. And I got to go back real quick. I know we're running long here, but I'm going to go real back to defense real quick and go to that that play where they ended up taking the delay of game and punting the ball. You know, as that was happening and all the defensive line was clapping, man, that was just a play where they said, man on man, we don't think we can get a yard on y'all. And they sat there, David, and they motioned four or five different guys to try to get our guys to jump off sides, and we wouldn't do it. And so I just thought that was awesome that our guys showed the discipline to stay down in their dirt and not move. And that was clearly Arkansas saying, Uncle, we're not man enough to get this yard here. I just thought it was awesome.
Yeah, and that was good, right? And it looked like synchronized swimming or something. Some of the movement that they did was, you know, obviously it's orchestrated, right? Because it's a call. But, you know, they would mirror movement on both sides of the ball. And they were just trying to get, you know, they were just really trying hard to get us to move. And so, yeah, you know, that could be that could be one of the sort of key plays as well. Had they been able to draw us off, then maybe the game, you know, maybe something else happens in the game. And I've used this analogy before.
Or David, had they felt they could have got the yard, right?
Sure. Oh yeah.
It is only a yard.
That even almost
the 45 yard line.
You know, they're going to line up there, and at first I thought that they were going to line up and sort of do two things on one play. I thought they were going to try to get us to jump, then they were going to run a play, and I thought, well, that would be actually really clever, because you never see that. You never see that. And if you have a real physical line, you could say, look, you could tell your linemen, we're going to do all this song and dance and we're going to try to get them to jump, but it's hat on hat. You need to knock somebody down. And so that struck me as, that is a Brett Bielema play. And then they didn't do it. And so, you know, it goes back to them, you know, them not feeling that they could gain a yard. And that's material in a game like this, right? And so this is kind of the dumb analogy that I use. It's like movies, right? You know, you can take sort of an indie drama movie, and, you know, a single, like, two-shot pistol is sort of the whole plot line revolves around that little pop gun. And you can take a Schwarzenegger movie where a little handgun is a joke, right? Because everything is howitzers and you know, M60s and stuff like that, and sort of the big power guns. And this was a, I don't want to call it a pop gun because it was a pop gun offense, but this was a low scoring, tight game, and any touchdown could have pivoted the game. And you know, you look at that and you say, I don't know, if they had gotten a yard, who knows, right? And so because that's kind of the nature of the game, you know, into the third quarter.
Well, it was a very tight game. And at that point, what I think is huge is Arkansas is ahead 7-3. Okay. And what's so huge about that play, David, is they're at the 46-yard line of ours. I'm sorry, I said it wrong a minute ago. It was 4th and 1 at our 46, and you're up 7-3 on the road at Alabama. You don't go for it. You punt it. And then what did we do the very next play? It was the 81-yarder to Calvin Ridley. The very first play call is our 81-yarder to Calvin Ridley at our 19-yard line right after that play.
Yeah.
So don't you think they didn't come out and say, guys, we got them. We just saw the white in their eyes.
Yes.
Let's go take it.
Because think about this, right? Think about what you're saying when you quote those field positions. They were at the Alabama 47. Our first play was an 81-yard play. So that means we got the ball at the 19.
And correct.
So, I mean, I'm not going to say that 30 yards or, you know, and it's 28 yards, right? You know, 29 yards. I'm not going to say that that's not significant, but it's 4th and 1.
Yes.
I'm not getting full value out of a punt here. I'm not going to get full value out of a punt. So maybe I do. And you know, I'm known as a running back, running game head coach. I've got the biggest line in college football. I'm going to punt. So your analogy, you know, we saw the whites of their eyes. We saw their spirit break in that play call right there. I think that's a good call. That's an insightful observation. I didn't think about it at the time, but that is what we saw there. And so we came out when they were maybe feeling some dejection, and we twisted the knife.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Nice.
Well, hey, give me some Texas A&M stuff. So tell me what you think looks like here, you know, as we go down to Cal Field.
One more thing on special teams. Does Adam Griffith keep the job?
Man, I don't know that you don't at least. You know, he's been through a lot of adversity in his life. I don't know if you least don't let J.K. Scott take a couple.
I think maybe J.K. on the kickoffs. I don't know that I do a field goal with J.K. And Adam actually has been doing pretty well on the kickoffs. So I don't know that I do that. It's almost you know, like a Mexican standoff type question, because you know Gunnar Rayborn, the backup kicker, got a DUI not long ago, and we've seen, you know, that's not a quick doghouse to get out of. And so I don't know, you know, and of course, you know, you have to kind of like Adam just because of his backstory, and you know, coach says and practice observers, you know, will comment that, you know, physically he's got it. Physically he's there, that this is all between the ears. And you think, man, if he, you know, you don't want to do more damage, but you don't want to lose a game. And you think, man, if he can get it straight, then he could be a significant asset to the team. And so you mix all that together, and you know, I want to say I don't know what you do, but I think you keep him. That's what I think we do.
I'm with you. I just don't know that you don't, you know, give I don't know that you don't try to shake him up a little bit by at least maybe giving somebody else an opportunity to maybe, you know, take one.
Yeah.
And maybe that's J.K. Scott as opposed to Gunner for that reason. Well, tell me about Texas A&M. You know, they're 5-0. They had their bye before us, as most teams get to do. You know, but they faced a Ball State. They faced a Nevada. They faced this Arkansas team at Arkansas and was only able to win by 7 and really should have lost that game. What do you think? Is this a paper tiger? Is this really a 5-0? Is this a team to be getting the pub that – this isn't the same Texas A&M type of team we faced in years past, I don't think.
No, it's not. Now, I really do like their quarterback. I think they've got some good play out of the quarterback. They've got a good wide receiver. you know, I don't think they've got, you know, kind of like what they've had. They don't have a mobile quarterback, you know, the Manziel that just, man, he gave us fits. I don't think they're, you know, kind of when they're at their heyday of being that good. I don't think they're that good, but I think they are good. I do like their coach. I think they're going to be a well-coached ball team. I think they are going to be aggressive down the field. I think that this Alabama team, and we have two data points, you know, playing on the road in Dallas against Wisconsin, you know, it would be a mighty stretch to call that a hostile territory. But Georgia definitely was hostile territory. And we saw how the team kind of reacted. I think, you know, the team had a little bit of a gut check, if you will, against Arkansas. I think going on the road, I think there's something about, and I'm not going to be able to put my finger, this is going to be one of those just intangible things that I'm either going to sound like I know what I'm talking about, or I'm going to sound nuts. But there's something in the personality of this team that they're going to strive on the adversity of being on the road in a hostile environment. And I think we're going to perform pretty well. The front line, I think, is going to get after the quarterback, not a mobile quarterback. And the back half of the defense is just, I mean, you know, we called it, they're going to get visibly better every week. And that's what we're seeing. And I think this is going to be a team where the defense is going to be excited to get to show some of the skills that they have. I mean, you know, okay, Georgia, a limited quarterback, running team, Arkansas, limited quarterback, running team. All right. I think there's some excitement on this defense to show what they've got, to show what they've really got against a quarterback who can throw the ball.
Well, I agree with you, and I think the Rashawn Evans, Tim Williams, Ronnie Harrison thing, I'm glad we've gotten this kind of buttoned down, because, you know, very different look than a Georgia with, you know, four starting wide receivers and they're starting 11. I'm glad we have faced some wide open attacks up until now. I think it's helped Minka. I think it's helped Marlon. I mean, let's face it, in their starting four wide receivers, they've got 75 catches between the four of them. So, you know, two of those guys accounted for 50 of those with 7 touchdowns. So they got two guys that definitely are their strongest ones in Josh Reynolds and Christian Kirk. But I think this is going to be a good test for the back secondary. And I at least like facing Cal Allen with the recent changes that we've made on third and long. I think Cal Allen is going to be pushed off of his throwing point, right? To use the football analogy, and he's not going to be able. I think we're going to get him uncomfortable quickly.
Yeah. What kind of score?
I started to say, man. As far as the score goes, you know, I think this is going to be something of the neighborhood of, you know, I'm going to say something like a 42-13.
Oh, wow.
Alabama. I don't think it's going to be close.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to hope that you're right. I was going to say like 34-17, maybe a 34-13 kind of game. I think our offense puts it together in a way that, you know, again, I think it's just fine-tuning the cylinder here and there. I think the offense puts it together a little bit better. I think the defense has some fun. And they're going to get plays, you know, they're going to make plays, and they're going to score some points. But and they'll get theirs honest, like Arkansas did not. But I think the defense will sort of prevail, and that's kind of where I see it. But
well, to your point, the last two times we played at Texas A&M, they scored 38 points in 11, and they scored 42 points 2 years ago. So I hope I'm right on my prediction, because they definitely have been able to put the points on the board. But I just look at who they've played this year, and I don't see the same team.
Yep. Hey, I want to do two things, and we talked about this a little bit sort of as we were getting started. I want to take it away from the podcast, from, you know, Alabama for a minute, and just and two quick things. As, like, literally as we were about to kind of flip the switch and record, I saw something come across where Steve Spurrier has announced that that he's going to retire at the end, and at the end of the season. And I just want to give hats off to the old, or, you know, visors off to the old ball coach. You know, I've kind of got, I guess, my two little Spurrier nuggets, but I remember, and, you know, I'll date myself a little bit, but, you know, back when, I was in high school, he was having his success at Duke. And I remember talking to a church deacon saying, "Ah, oh, that's Steve Spurrier. He's going to be great." And you know, he was an older man, and he said, "It's too early. It's too early to call him great. He's good, but, you know, it's going to take some years before we find out that he's great." And I wish I could somehow go find that deacon and look him up and say, "Hey, you know, Steve Spurrier turned out to be great." My adult life, he has been a coach, and so, you know, I guess that's kind of the passing of time. I think he's approaching 70 or over 70, and so, you know, we knew it was coming, but, you know, it was just one of those things. And then I remember, and you and I, you know, you and I spent a lot of time talking about it, but, you know, back in 1998, Alabama played Florida in the SEC championship game, and that was the year with Sean Alexander and Chris Samuels, and I wasn't going to go to that game because I said, "Man, we beat them in the swamp. You don't beat a good team twice. I'm nervous about this high-powered Florida team." And you drug me to the game, and then, of course, we saw Alabama win that game, and we stood near where we could look into a box and saw the press conference with Spurrier. And I think both of us gained a little bit of respect that day because he called it like it was. He said, "You know, we got beat. They played better than we did. They were more prepared than we did. Their players came ready to play and showed up and competed, and we didn't. And that's on me for not preparing the team," and all the things that he kind of says and his little quippish, a little way of talking. But, you know, we were younger than we were than we are now. But, you know, I think we were both kind of impressed with that's a head coach owning it. And so that's my two little Spurrier thoughts. I don't know if you have anything to add or
no,
or
man.
We're just going to see him go.
Now, I remember that press conference, man. He didn't pull punches, and we gained a lot of respect for him at that point.
Yep. Well, that's my deal on Spurrier. You know, he'll definitely be missed. I hope he gets a studio job somewhere because he's funny, and he's got the best little one-liners, and, you know, you can't spell citrus without UT, and you always want to play Georgia early because you can count on them, have a couple guys suspended. You know, those things are just priceless, and so – I hope that he can find an outlet for his homespun wisdom as he gets out of coaching. I want to switch gears and talk a little bit about the podcast rankings on iTunes. I just want to give a hats off, super thanks to everyone who's downloading us, who's listening to us, who's leaving us reviews. We're up to 66 reviews on iTunes. If you search college football within iTunes, we've been ranked as high as number 7, which is pretty darn impressive. I think we're sitting at 9 now. And so we'd really appreciate if folks could go out and leave us some reviews. And when we get 5-star rankings, we'd like to try to call those out when we can. And we got – now, this is the guy's username, and so he's not talking about the show. His username is "Don't Waste Time on This One." And so, but that's his username. That's not what he talks about on the show. What he talks about on the show is simply the best. He gives us 5 stars and he says, this is by far my favorite podcast. This show really stands out in the world of caller driven talk radio that focuses on team pride and surface level analysis. This show is for football, all caps, football fans who also happen to be Bama fans, as opposed to diehard Bama fans who don't really understand the nuances of the game. And so I thought that was, he also, you know, wishes that we would spend more time talking about future opponents. And I wish we had time to do that as well. But, hey, we really appreciate the shout out, and we appreciate the support and rankings that we get within iTunes. And if you feel so compelled, go give us an authentic review, and we'll see if we can't give you a shout out in a future show.
Absolutely, guys. We know this runs long. It's because we could talk about this for 24 hours after the game, and we definitely appreciate y'all listening.
Yeah. Hey, so with that, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, powered by Bama Hammer. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.